Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Obituaries for Friday, July 24th. Jerome Jerry Howard Chauner. Jerome H. Jerry Chauner, 83 of Odessa, passed away July 19th. Funeral services were held Friday, July 24th at Crossroads Fellowship with Dr. Griffin Jones officiating. Burial followed at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Jerry was born to Elmer Jerome Chauner and Dorothy Shelmadine Chauner in Claremore, Oklahoma. He married Joy Maurice Hill in 1956. Jerry is preceded in death by his parents, Dorothy and Elmer Chauner, and his wife, Joy Hill Chauner. He is survived by his sister, Sally Allen, four sons, Vance Howard Chauner and wife, Jonna, Rob Michael Chauner and wife, Kathy, Jerome Scott Chauner and wife, Debbie, and Christian Lee Chauner and wife, Monica, 12 grandchildren, and 18 great-grandchildren. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Danny Clarence Corzine. Danny Clarence Corzine, 75 of New Braunfels, passed away July 12th. He was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma, July 22nd, 1944. And he married Glendell Marie Boatman in 1965. Dan is survived by his wife of 55 years, Glendell, his sons Daryl Corzine and wife Sherry of Odessa, and Sean Corzine and wife Shana of New Braunfels, his sister Anita Miller and husband Ty, and an uncle, all of Odessa, eight grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his parents, Clarence and Ethel Corzine, his son, Philip Brent Corzine, and a brother, Tracy Corzine. The family will hold a private memorial service in New Braunfels, July 25th. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be sent to Hope Hospice, 611 North Walnut in New Braunfels, 78130. Betty June Hagel Guthrie. Betty Guthrie passed away July 21st in Midland at the age of 80. She was born September 21st, 1939 in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, to the late Frank James and Georgia Marie Hagel. She married James Allen Guthrie in 1959. Betty is preceded in death by James, her husband of 35 years, her parents, two brothers, Frank James Jr. and Paul Lewis, and two sisters, Patsy and Sandra. She is survived by her three children, five grandchildren, and eight great-grandchildren. Daughter Lori Guthrie Searcy of Odessa, Steve Guthrie and his wife Eileen of Midland, and David Guthrie and his wife Deborah of Odessa, as well as a niece and a nephew and several cousins. A private graveside service will be held at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Henry Clinton Hank Holland. Monahans. Henry Clinton Hank Holland passed away at home July 18th at the age of 69. He was born in Monahans January 6th, 1951. He was preceded in death by his mother, Clinton May McBride Holland, and his father, Claude Ward Holland. He is survived by his wife, Linda McDaniel of Monahans, two sisters, Claudia Caraway of San Angelo, and Christy Kessler of San Antonio. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, July 27th at Harkey Funeral Home Chapel with Billy Riley officiating. Visit the website harkeyfunerals.com to sign the guest book or to leave a personal note for the family. Death notices. Juan Cortez. Juan Cortez, 57, of Gardendale, died Thursday, July 16th in Odessa. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. July 25th at St. William Catholic Church in Denver City with Father Eduardo Teo officiating. Arrangements are by Ratliff Funeral Home of Denver City. Edward Lee Ed Green. Edward Lee Ed Green, 70, died Monday, July 20th. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Rao Lian Thang. Rao Lian Thang, 77, of Midland, died Saturday, July 18th. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. July 25th at the Midland Chin Fellowship Church. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery with Pastor Kop Thang officiating.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, July 20th, 2020. This is the oil page. This article is entitled, Exxon May Lose Ranking as Top North Texas Company. Irving-based pharmaceutical distribution company could be number one in terms of revenue. By Ashton Nichols, Dallas Morning News. ExxonMobil Corporation altered the North Texas business landscape when it moved its corporate headquarters from New York City to Irving in 1989, instantly establishing the oil giant as the region's largest company by revenue. In the three decades since, its reign at the top has been largely unchallenged, as Exxon went on to become the world's most valuable company. It first gained that lofty title in 2005, and again as recently as 2013, before being pushed aside by the rise of big tech. By the end of last year, though, it tumbled all the way to 18th in a global ranking, according to an analysis by PricewaterhouseCoopers. This year, Exxon is at risk of losing the top spot in the Dallas Morning News annual ranking of the 150 largest public companies headquartered in North Texas. Exxon and the rest of the oil and gas industry are staggering from a mighty 1-2 punch, a pandemic that zapped energy demand, and oil production standoff between Russia and Saudi Arabia that drove prices down to $20 a barrel earlier this year. Oil prices are now in the $40 range. Oil averaged $57 a barrel last year, enough to keep Exxon atop the news ranking, despite shedding close to $24 billion in revenue. Of the nearly two dozen oil and gas companies headquartered locally, just over half managed to pump out a profit last year, as the U.S. shale boom lost its sheen. Three other energy companies in last year's ranking went bankrupt and sold off assets before 2019 ended. In all, 113 North Texas companies saw revenue rise last year, including 72 that eclipsed the $1 billion mark, according to data compiled by Bloomberg for the news. A handful even had banner years with triple-digit revenue growth. Plano-based sharing services Global Corporation led the way, raising its top line by 923.85% year over year. This year, few companies are escaping the COVID-19 economic fallout. Most are cutting staff and capital spending, slicing employee and executive salaries, and delaying or canceling dividend payments to shareholders. Next year's ranking will likely become a battle of survivors. Exxon's fall? For Exxon, 2019 is already a distant memory, overshadowed by a health crisis that's creating economic havoc across the globe. To control COVID-19, states like Texas enacted stay-at-home orders, bringing car, truck, and plane travel to a screeching halt. Early on, someone joked that because of the stay-at-home orders, they were getting 3 weeks to the gallon, said Bruce Newsom, a Haynes and Boone's lawyer with more than 20 years' experience in the energy field. Demand is just beginning to bounce back. The four-week average gasoline supply is now less than 10% below levels from a year earlier, compared with 44% lower in April, according to Energy Information Administration data. Texas oil and gas companies are accustomed to boom and bust cycles. Coming into the pandemic, producers had to crank out 100 million barrels of oil a day globally to keep prices steady, said Kumar Venkatakumaran, a finance professor and academic director of the energy program at Southern Methodist University. When prices dropped and people stopped traveling, global demand fell to around 82 million barrels of oil a day, leaving producers with an excess supply. Many of the U.S. independent producers, as well as major oil companies who respond to the economics of producing oil, have cut down on their supply, Venkataraman said. At roughly the same time, an oil price policy war broke out between Russia and Saudi Arabia when Russia refused OPEC's request to cut oil production. By March 23rd, oil prices had plummeted to $21 a barrel and even briefly turned negative on April 20th. By July, OPEC and U.S. producers had cut supply to about 90 million barrels a day, Venkataraman said. Exxon's revenue had already fallen 8.5% last year, from $279 billion in 2018 to $255 billion. In the first 3 months of this year, just before the pandemic's deepest economic pain, the company's revenue came in at $56 billion, or nearly $7.5 billion less than the same period last year. It recorded its first quarterly loss in 32 years. Based on its performance so far, Exxon's 2020 revenue is projected to slide to $176 billion, an astonishing $80 billion drop, according to a June estimate by J.P. Morgan analysts. Exxon reports second quarter results July 31st, potentially giving a clearer picture of the pandemic's toll. Ready to move up? So barring a significant second half surge in oil prices, who stands to move up in the news ranking? It's one of the region's newest Fortune 500 companies. McKesson Corporation, an Irving-based pharmaceutical distribution company that relocated its headquarters from California in 2019, has been on an uptick because of the COVID-19 pandemic. It saw 12% revenue growth in the first 3 months of this year as a result of branded drug price increases and pandemic-driven orders from retail pharmacies. Its $214 billion in revenue for the 2019 fiscal year grew to $231 billion for its 2020 fiscal year, which ended March 31st. McKesson's 2009 fiscal year results were included in the news ranking. For Exxon to retain its number one status, the Oil and Gas Explorer's 2020 revenue will have to top $231 billion. It would not surprise me if the revenues of McKesson are higher than they are for Exxon, said Bud Weinstein, an economist and associate director of SMU's McGuire Energy Institute. This is again a reflection of the problems facing the industry energy sector and the falling demand for energy and energy products. While at the same time, McKesson and other companies that are into medical products like pharmaceuticals, their stocks have held up pretty well. AT&T, the region's perennial runner-up to Exxon before McKesson's arrival, could also pass up the oil king. Bloomberg analysts estimate AT&T's 2020 revenue will come in between $170 and $179 billion. Hitting the high end of the range could push Exxon down to third. But AT&T is facing headwinds of its own. When it released first quarter results in April, AT&T said its revenue was down $2 billion from the same period last year, $42.8 billion versus $44.8 billion. And in June, the company embarked on a $6 billion cost-cutting plan that includes closing 250 stores and cutting 1,300 jobs. While the coronavirus increased use of AT&T's broadband and wireless networks and its content platforms, it also hit the company's advertising revenue. A third of AT&T's business is through Turner Broadcasting System, which includes television channels such as CNN, TNT, and Cartoon Network, said Bloomberg Intelligence analyst John Butler, who closely follows AT&T. Warner Brothers Television and film production was also halted due to the pandemic. There's been a big advertising revenue recession, Butler said. Satellites have been under pressure from cord cutting. And now with the loss of sports programming, COVID-19 is not only hitting the advertising markets hard, but it's also hitting paid TV. Bankruptcies and write-downs. Both small and large oil companies are feeling the pandemic pinch. Law firm Haynes & Boone has monitored North American oil and gas producer bankruptcies since 2015. Over the past 5 years, 226 producers filed for bankruptcy, according to the firm's data. Texas producers accounted for 106 of those. The energy industry was already having to change going into the pandemic, and this is going to accelerate that change, Newsom said. In the past month, Fort Worth-based Lillis Energy and Oklahoma City-based fracking pioneer Chesapeake Energy sought bankruptcy protection. Oil major Royal Dutch Shell PLC wrote down the value of its assets by up to $22 billion on June 30th, citing lower energy prices and a lack of demand during the pandemic. BP PLC did the same in early June. Oil and gas assets are valued on how much a company holds in reserves. Reserves are estimated on an anticipated price of a barrel of oil. Companies reduce the value of assets when oil prices fall below predictions, said Michael Cooper, a Haynes & Boone energy lawyer who has worked in the industry for more than 40 years. Cooper said he expects Exxon to eventually do the same, as even the oil patch's biggest players prepare for an uncertain future. There's no way I see this being like it has been in the past, Cooper said. It'll be a slow recovery, slower than anything we've seen in the past. Exxon did not respond to the news' interview request, but CEO Darren Woods addressed the pandemic during a call with investors in late May, when the company cut its spending in the oil-rich Permian Basin. On average, we estimate that global demand for oil in 2020 will be down roughly 10%, Woods told investors. We expect demand for natural gas to be down less than 5%. With the industry's boom periods in mind, Weinstein said he won't be surprised if Exxon loses the top spot and then regains it in the future after COVID-19 economic disruptions level out. Exxon's not going away, Weinstein said. Energy is kind of the lubricant for the national and global economy. This article is distributed by Tribune Content Agency.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, July 19th, 2020. Letters to the Editor. Local healthcare workers deserve reward. I read the letter from a Midland Memorial Hospital healthcare worker in Wednesday's Reporter-Telegram. It filled me with emotion, but also with many questions. Kit Bredemus, chief nursing officer at MMH, summed things up quite well. What he failed to mention is that his effort to explain the plight of healthcare workers in Midland and elsewhere is often and inexplicably not understood. Rather, it seems that any appreciation for what these individuals go through is incorrectly interpreted in a negative way by some who are apparently devoid of any sort of human compassion. Thus, words such as those so eloquently phrased by Kit Bredemus often fall on deaf ears. Did any of those expressing animus on social media toward MMH healthcare workers even take a second to think of their actions? Did they even once think about the risk these individuals choose to take on every single day they go to work? Did they even once think about the fact that these individuals have to work, but, more important, possess the passion and desire to work to do what they can for the health of this community? Did they ever even once consider the sacrifice of these individuals make with respect to their own families, friends, and loved ones? Sadly, the answer to these questions is a resounding no. The only rewards these true community heroes receive now for all the good they do are social media utterances filled with hurtful and hateful expressions. Midland has long stood for many things, some good, some questionable, but all in the best interest of Midland. I would hope that before firing off hurtful diatribes on social media, critics take a minute to reflect on the reality of the situation we face. And rather than meet these challenges with complaints, seek to be part of the solution and applaud loudly the job each and every Midland healthcare worker performs in the face of this once-in-a-lifetime unseen enemy. William Green. MMH personnel are valued and loved. Midland Memorial Hospital personnel don't waste time reading or listening to the few self-centered, egotistical, uncaring lightweights who make a career of complaining about anything that inconveniences them, annoys them, or brushes against their precious supposed rights. Don't give those few people a moment of their precious time. Please know the majority of us are holding you close in our hearts and prayers every minute of every day. We appreciate the job you're doing, the long hours, the heartache of loss, the frustration of not getting enough of what you need when you need it, pulling 12-hour shifts, not enough sleep, little rest on the job, not enough time with your families, and the list goes on. The people who matter in this community are your support. We're your cheerleaders. We're the power prayers. We're the ones who pass hospital bonds. We're the voices you need to hear in your head when the tears sting, the fatigue threatens, the tension rises, the hope dims, and the end seems endless. God is always with you, and so are we. Remember, you are valued, you are prayed for, you are loved. Joyce Sherrod. Healthcare employees are angels. Midland Memorial Hospital is not a place I wanted to be. Either last August, after I was hit and badly injured by a car on my morning walk, or again in November, as my beautiful dear mother's life slipped away. But as difficult as the first experience, and as crushingly sad as the second, I could not be more grateful for the kind, loving, conscientious, and outstanding care provided by the MMH healthcare staff. Each and every nurse, doctor, aide, food service worker, and custodian treated my family and me with patience, tenderness, and compassion. Angels all. With the pressure, stress, and strain of COVID-19, these same wonderful folks and many like them are now under the gun like never before. My family and I offer our grateful hearts for both their service to us and their service to our community in these trying times. Becky Baskin Ferguson. The Opinion Page. Opinion Extra by Rich Lowry from King Features Syndicate. Biden's campaign is shockingly adequate. The Biden campaign has been lucky most of all, but it's also been smart, at least smart enough. To go, as Joe Biden did, from left of dead to sweeping to the nomination and quickly thereafter emerging as the favorite in November is a run of success that would be the envy of any national politician. It's easy to consider this a mere accident given the weakness of Biden's opponents. First, a socialist in the Democratic primaries who had a ceiling on his support, and now an incumbent president whose ratings have sagged. The Biden team certainly isn't going to rewrite any campaign playbooks or dazzle anyone with its brilliance, but it has avoided serious mistakes and demonstrated an understanding of the basic political terrain and its candidates' strengths. It hasn't asked Biden to do anything out of his comfort zone or beyond his capabilities, and has been content for President Donald Trump to dominate all the attention so long as Trump is not advancing his cause, and often setting it back with all the airtime and headlines. Above all, the campaign has avoided the most politically perilous ideological excesses throughout. This has required some discipline, given how influential woke Twitter is on the left. Biden's theory of the Democratic Party, even if it seemed doubtful at the outset, proved correct, that the center of gravity of the party was still with, as he put it, Obama-Biden Democrats, rather than with the avowed socialists and social justice warriors. Biden hewed to this line when other candidates went the other way. It might seem obvious that endorsing Medicare for All, which involves yanking away the private health insurance of more than 100 million Americans, is foolish and politically indefensible. But several candidates in the Democratic race did it anyway. He steered clear of other pitfalls since locking up the nomination. He said he would not ban hydraulic fracturing. He did not endorse defunding the police. He defended the statues of America's founders. He's indisputably slid left. This has been his MO his entire career, to stay smack in the middle of whatever is the consensus position of the Democratic Party at any given time. He's running on the leftmost platform of any Democratic nominee in a couple of generations, but has tried to soften the edges as much as possible. As a general matter, nothing he's said has made much of an impression one way or the other. His campaign knows that it benefits if the election is a referendum on Trump, and is acting accordingly. On the other hand, Trump should know that it hurts him if the election is a referendum on him, yet persists in making it one anyway. Why should Biden try to take the mic away from Trump if the president is using it to feud with Bubba Wallace and Dr. Anthony Fauci? Not only do these diversions do nothing to dent Biden, they serve to validate the former vice president's case that the country needs to return to normalcy. Still, nothing is decided in July. Events took a hand earlier this year in turning a political tailwind for Trump into a stiff headwind. Something unforeseeable could damage the dynamic yet again, and better economic conditions could improve the overall atmosphere. Biden's record and agenda give Trump targets to shoot at, and he should obviously take every opportunity to make the election, to the extent he can, about the radicalism of the Democratic Party. Finally, there's the fact that Biden is an unsteady performer at best. The strictures around COVID-19 have relieved him of the rigors of the typical presidential campaign, but he's going to have to emerge to participate in a debate or debates in the fall, and no one can rule out some catastrophic failure. So, Trump can't be counted out, but the Biden campaign is canny enough that it isn't going to make it easy for him.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, July 19th, 2020. Opinion. National View. Congress, do your job. Help Americans without one. The Point. Federal aid is about to lapse even as the coronavirus crisis rolls on. Unemployment benefits provide people who lose jobs with a little help for a little while. The money is not really enough to live on by design. People are supposed to find a new job. During an economic crisis, however, people can't find jobs. They need money to live on. Congress recognized this reality in March when it responded to the arrival of the coronavirus pandemic by increasing unemployment benefits. But the expansion expires at the end of this month, even as the pandemic continues to rage. Congress, after dragging its feet for months, has all but run out of time to prevent a lapse in the distribution of extra aid. The program created in March has two main components. First, Congress expanded eligibility for unemployment benefits to include self-employed workers, gig workers, and others who were previously ineligible. Americans deserve to have that adjustment made permanent. It moves the safety net of unemployment benefits more squarely beneath the modern workforce. As of the end of June, more than 14 million American workers had qualified for benefits under the expansion, out of a total of 33 million workers drawing unemployment benefits. The second component of the rescue package gave unemployment workers a $600 weekly payment from the federal government on top of their standard unemployment check, which averages $373 a week, although the amount varies widely by state. The average recipient is thus getting nearly $1,000 a week. People also can collect the benefits for up to 39 weeks, up from as little as 13 weeks before the crisis. Federal aid, including the expansion of unemployment benefits, has helped to stabilize the finances and thus the lives of millions of American households and the communities of which they are a part. It's not as good as a job. Among other things, millions of people have lost their health insurance. But even as the pandemic has pushed unemployment to the highest levels since the Great Depression, research suggests the aid is preventing any meaningful increase in the share of families living in poverty. When Congress slapped a July expiration date on the program, there was reason to hope that the United States might have brought the pandemic under control by now. Other nations have done so. But the United States has failed to control the spread of the virus, and fear continues to curtail economic activity. The need for continued aid is undeniable. The House of Representatives passed a bill in May that would extend the aid program through January, but few economic analysts expect the economy to recover by then, particularly as the first wave of the coronavirus continues to spread rapidly across the Sun Belt. While any arbitrary deadline risks another battle over reauthorization, a January deadline would be particularly fraught. After the Republican Party lost control of the White House in 2009, during the last economic crisis, congressional Republicans decided it was politically expedient to oppose federal spending that was needed to revive the economy. Democrats would be wise to take the lesson. The size of the $600 bonus is also a subject of controversy. The figure was chosen because lawmakers wanted to provide workers with the money they would have earned, but the antediluvian conditions in many state unemployment offices made it impossible to tailor benefits. Instead, Congress picked a figure that would make the average worker whole. Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, and Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, introduced legislation early this month to continue the emergency aid on a state-by-state basis until the jobless rates in each state recede. Expanded eligibility would last until unemployment dropped to 5.5%. Expanded benefits would drop by $100 when the rate fell below 11%, and by another $100 each time the rate dropped by another percentage point, ending when the rate hit 6%. Congress can avoid the need for similarly ad hoc policymaking during future crises by providing funding for states to fix the problems that have impeded the distribution of benefits and by adopting rules to automatically expand and contract supplemental benefits. Claudia Sahm, then a Federal Reserve economist, wrote in a paper published last year that the movement of the unemployment rate could be used as a reliable indicator. She found that since the 1970s, when a three-month average of the unemployment rate rose half a percentage point above the lowest rate during the previous year, the economy was in a recession. Ms. Sahm, now the director of macroeconomic policy at the Washington Center for Equitable Growth, has proposed using this Sahm rule as a trigger to initiate aid programs such as supplemental unemployment benefits. The emergency aid would then continue until the unemployment rate fell back to that threshold. In the current crisis, emergency aid would continue until the unemployment rate, now 11.1%, receded to 5.3%. That would be a smarter way to provide workers with necessary and timely aid. The New York Times. This is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Sunday, July 19th, 2020. Other voices. Bring on the barrels. You can help. By State Representative Brooks Landgraf. At this time last year, the most common concern I heard from constituents had to do with the state of our roads and highways in the Permian Basin. Your voices were heard loud and clear, not only by me, but by top brass at the state capitol, too, as record-level funding was secured for the Permian Basin after the 2019 legislative session. I'm proud of what we accomplished, and we're beginning to see the fruits of that labor in the form of better highways in West Texas. While I know a lot has changed since last summer, our transportation infrastructure is still in desperate need of attention. Traffic is nowhere close to what it was, but it is only a matter of time before the Permian Basin returns to being the most productive energy-producing region on planet Earth. Thankfully, there is good news on that front. The Texas Department of Transportation, TXDOT, TxDOT, just released the draft of the 2021 Unified Transportation Program, UTP. TxDOT's 10-year plan that guides the development of transportation projects across the state. The 2021 draft UTP sets aside nearly $2.5 billion for the Odessa TxDOT district, comprising Andrews, Crane, Ector, Loving, Martin, Midland, Pecos, Reeves, Terrell, Upton, Ward, and Winkler counties. This includes more than $850 million for new projects that were not in last year's UTP and sets a new high water mark for transportation funding in the Permian Basin. However, this is only a draft and must still be approved by the Texas Transportation Commission in August. Projects can be added to the UTP based on recommendations by TxDOT staff, TxDOT district engineers, or through public comment. The commissioners are allotted a certain amount of discretion to be able to provide funding for transportation projects based on their statewide significance. A large portion of the funds that are being earmarked for the Permian Basin for the next decade are a direct result of this discretion, reflecting Governor Abbott's Permian promise. We owe Governor Abbott a debt of gratitude for his leadership on this crucial issue. Some of the new projects included in the 2021 UTP include upgrading SL 338 in Odessa to freeway standards, widening SH 176 in Andrews, and widening SH 115 between Kermit and Monahans. There is also additional funding set aside for more improvements to I-20 over the next decade. including making I-23 lanes in each direction. If you want TxDOT to consider adding another project to the list, or you just want to voice your support for the current draft of the 2021 UTP, you can submit public comments between now and August 10th, 2020, online using this link, https://www.surveymonkey.com/r/2021UTP, or mail your comments to TxDOT, Attention Unified Transportation Program, P.O. Box 149217, Austin, Texas 78714-9217. I encourage you to show your support for these important highway projects in the Permian Basin. There are a lot of barrels in our future, the orange kind and the kind filled with oil. The orange barrels on the side of the highway are a sign that our roads are getting safer and more efficient, and that we will be more prepared to receive the full economic benefit the next time the Permian Basin is producing 4 million barrels of oil a day. God bless Texas. Brooks Landgraf. Landgraf serves House District 81, which encompasses Andrews, Ector, Ward, and Winkler counties. Guest View. Freedom Carries the Day at the Supreme Court by Andrea Jones, InsideSources.com. Since the founding days of the Republic, people of faith have joined together to serve their neighbors and instruct their children in their beliefs, and the First Amendment to the Constitution makes protecting their freedom to do so one of the government's most basic obligations. The Supreme Court last week handed down two welcome and important decisions in two religious liberty cases, Little Sisters of the Poor versus Pennsylvania and Our Lady of Guadalupe School versus Morrissey Beru. But it shouldn't have taken an intervention from the Supreme Court to affirm the basic principle that faith-based organizations have the right to operate in accordance with their beliefs and to decide who can teach their faith to students without interference from the government. The Little Sisters of the Poor are a group of Catholic nuns who dedicate their lives to those deemed most disposable by society, the sick and elderly in need. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the sisters have cared for those most vulnerable to the virus and tended to the dying, all at high risk to themselves. And yet, for nearly 8 years, these nuns have been entangled in endless court battles as they seek to protect their right to operate in accordance with their deeply held religious beliefs. The Little Sisters had already made one trip to the Supreme Court to defend themselves against the Department of Health and Human Services mandate, requiring religious employers to provide contraceptives and abortifacient drugs, and they were forced to endure another round of time and resource-consuming litigation when state governments challenged the religious exemption the sisters were granted by the Trump administration. In a 7-2 decision, the Supreme Court ruled that the federal agencies in question do indeed have the authority to broaden the religious exemption to the contraceptive mandate, and that they followed the necessary procedural rules in doing so. While the court was right to uphold the expanded exemption, it failed to resolve the underlying issue, whether the Religious Freedom Restoration Act requires the government to accommodate religious organizations' objections to providing abortifacients. By dodging the central question in this case, the majority has all but ensured that the Little Sisters of the Poor will end up in court again. Back in 2012, the Supreme Court affirmed in the Hosanna-Tabor case that federal employment discrimination laws could not be applied to religious organizations' selection of religious leaders. Last week's decision in Our Lady of Guadalupe School upheld this precedent. It further held that the ministerial exception covers teachers at religious schools who are responsible for instructing children in the faith, restricting the government's ability to impose arbitrary formalistic tests to determine who qualifies as a minister. The idea that faith-based schools should have the right to staff those schools with employees who will uphold their mission of passing down their beliefs to the next generation should be non-controversial, but it took a lengthy process of litigation to clarify this. Religious liberty is a fundamental American right. It includes not just the right to worship freely, but also the right to live out religious beliefs, both in the public square and within organizations founded on the basis of those beliefs. The Supreme Court's ruling in these two recent cases reinforced this truth, but the reality is that the current state of affairs still falls short of the constitutional ideal. An America that truly values and respects faith-based institutions' contributions to the nation will not seek to prevent the Little Sisters of the Poor from serving those in need with capricious regulations or appoint itself the arbiter in Our Lady of Guadalupe School's decisions on how to teach the faith. While the court got it right in these cases, there is still a long way to go toward protecting true religious liberty for all Americans. Andrea Jones is a research assistant in the Heritage Foundation's DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society. She wrote this for InsideSources.com. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, July 19th, 2020, etc. Choice of baby's name could be reminder of family sorrow. Dear Abby, my wife and I are expecting our second child. We are facing a moral decision based on choosing his name. My wife's cousin sadly had a late-term miscarriage 2 years ago. The name they were going to give their baby is coincidentally the same first and middle name that we have chosen for our child. We have wanted this combination of first and middle names for years, well before her cousin had her misfortune. In our case, the middle name is in honor of my wife's father. The first name is just one we have always liked, and frankly, we cannot think of any other names we like more. Is it immoral or even unkind to name our child the same as her cousin's child? Should we consider a different name to avoid causing them pain? Respectful in Hawaii. Dear Respectful, please try harder to find a different first name for your baby. Although it would not be immoral to give your little one the same name as this cousin's stillborn baby, if this woman interacts with you at all, it will cause her pain. Even though no one owns a name, to use these two would be extremely insensitive. Dear Abby, I shared some information with my grandson about his mother that I shouldn't have. He repeated it to her during an argument, and now she's angry with me. I apologized, but it has not been acknowledged or accepted. Our relationship has always been tenuous, and frankly, it's not a big deal for me. She will get over it, but she's enjoying holding it over my head and being the victim. They're moving into a beautiful house this weekend. My son told me he can't wait for me to see it, and he's sure it won't be long before I'm allowed to come out and visit. What would you do? I'm thinking of buying an olive tree. They're in style, and it would be my way of extending an olive branch. I will take it over when I know my son is there. Good idea? Big Mouth in Oklahoma. Dear Big Mouth, it's cute, but an olive branch and another sincere apology might be less expensive and go over better. It might even last longer than a tree in her brand new yard that reminds her of something unpleasant. Dear Abby, I have a miniature dachshund, Snoopy, that I take on walks in the neighborhood. I am very good about picking up any deposits that he makes. One neighbor has asked that I not allow him to use her yard for either number one or number two while on his walks. Is this unreasonable or, more to the point, practical? Anybody who has ever had a dog knows that stopping a dog and picking him up the second he lifts his leg or squats will quite often result in disaster. Again, I'm very good about picking up his deposits and have never left anything in her yard. What say you? Responsible pet guardian. Dear guardian, dogs do not urinate just to relieve themselves. They also do it to leave messages for other dogs. Snoopy would have less of an urge to go in that woman's yard if other dogs had not already signed in. I feel for that poor homeowner because if enough dogs use her lawn as a post office, they could destroy it. Also, when dogs defecate, traces can be left behind, which make it very unpleasant for those who take care of the landscaping. Please try to do as she has requested. P.S. If the homeowner had written me about this, I would have advised her to fence her property if it is allowed by the Homeowners Association. Abigail Van Buren. Write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Ranitidine Substitute. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Friday, July 24th. Dear Dr. Roach, for the past 7 or 8 years, I have taken 300 milligrams of ranitidine before bedtime. It was prescribed to treat reflux. As you know, this product has been recalled. I wonder if I could be suffering any adverse effects from my sustained usage. If so, what tests or treatments would you recommend? My age is 78. I am suffering from abdominal discomfort, cramps, bloating, belching, and gas. Answer. Ranitidine, Zantac, and others, is in the class of drugs called H2 blockers. They block the histamine type 2 receptors in the stomach, which stimulate acid secretion. H2 blockers are not as potent as the proton pump inhibitors, such as omeprazole, but they have the advantage of starting to work quickly and being generally safe. These drugs have been recalled due to contamination with NDMA, which is potentially cancer-causing. However, there have been no reports of NDMA causing cancer in humans. I wouldn't recommend any extra testing to look for cancer. The risk is probably quite small. Manufacturers of H2 blockers are changing their processes to make the drugs without NDMA contamination. Famotidine and cimetidine are available alternatives that do not have NDMA contamination. Tries to coax opinions from man aiming to please. Dear Abby, for Friday, July 24th. Dear Abby, this may seem strange, but my husband is too nice. His late mother, a domineering woman who always got her way, trained him not to have an opinion. Almost everything he says is crafted to be neutral so that nobody can possibly take issue with him. If I asked, "What do you want for dinner?" his reply is, "Whatever you want." If I ask, "What make of car should we buy?" his reply is, "What kind would you like?" When I give him several choices, he tries to guess what I would prefer. He is a wonderful, kind, sweet man who will do anything for me. We both have professional degrees and are in our early 30s. He lived with his parents through college. I have been on my own longer than he. I've told him I'm not like his mother was, and it's safe for him to express his opinions. After 2 years of marriage, although I continue to solicit his opinion, not much has changed. Abby, I am tired of being in charge of everything. I'm afraid I'll become like his mother and just do what I want because consulting him is a waste of time, and hearing another whatever answer irritates me. I feel like I'm raising a very obedient child. I wanted an equal partner in marriage. How should I handle this? Wife, not mother. Dear wife, I am guessing you have had more than one conversation with your husband about this. There is a saying, give me a child till the age of 7 and he's mine for life, which references indoctrination. Your late mother-in-law had her son under her roof for about 25 years, so his personality traits are pretty well cemented in. You might have better luck if you start phrasing your questions differently. Do you want chicken or fish tonight? Do you want to decide, or should I punch you in the nose? But if it doesn't work, you may have to accept the man you married just the way his mother made him. Dear Abby, I'm currently living with my fiancé, Josie. That we are a same-sex couple was hard for our families to come to terms with, mainly Josie's mother. We are now planning a small courthouse wedding with a family dinner to follow a week later. We have made this clear to family and close friends, and nobody has taken issue with it. However, Josie's mother thinks it isn't right that we are inviting only parents to the ceremony and not siblings. Josie has one, I have three. She also called Josie crying because Josie and I went dress shopping on our own, spontaneously. My mother is perfectly happy with all of our decisions and supportive with whatever we decide. How can we get my fiancé's mother to be more supportive? Wedding drama in Pennsylvania. Dear wedding drama, it might be helpful to recognize that while your family is more accepting, Josie's mother appears to be struggling on a couple of fronts. As many mothers do, she may have fantasized about a church wedding, helping her daughter select her bridal gown, and having a son-in-law. In a sense, she is grieving the death of her fantasy. Frankly, I feel sorry for the woman. With time, I am sure she will become more accepting and supportive. You and Josie are about to embark on your lives together. Let your happiness be the beacon that guides her mother to acceptance, although it may not happen as quickly as you would wish.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Leo and a moon in Virgo until 9:54 p.m., when the moon enters Libra. Happy birthday for Friday, July 24, 2020. Attractive and exciting, you can be drawn to unstable situations, but this year you succeed by progressing slowly, one step at a time. Your talent does not have to be proved to anyone, but shines through on its own merit. If single, it's not for long, as suitors literally clamor for you. If attached, your relationship is passionate and at times dramatic. Tone it down if you want longevity. Libra balances you. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19, 2 stars. Nervous energy abounds. Take time to release stress. Temperature extremes impact your health. Focus on ways to beat the heat. Chronic health situations can take a turn for the better, or promising new treatments can surface today. Tonight, cool off. Taurus, April 20 through May 20, 5 stars. It is easy to reveal your deepest feelings. You'll wear your heart on your sleeve today. Prepare for a time of excitement and intensity in love. Relationships with young people are uplifting. A fairy tale character provides inspiration. Tonight, write your own fairy tale. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 3 stars. Discussions revolve around home improvements and decisions about your residence. Prepare a house blessing by smudging with sage. Visitors suggest interesting ideas and offer valuable insights during casual conversation. Tonight, explore the different options, but sleep on it before initiating change. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 4 stars. Today, anticipate some intriguing conversations and messages. Several short journeys are likely. It's a great time to catch up on current events. Much is taking place in the world around you. Tonight, catch up with old and long-lost friends with phone calls and emails. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 3 stars. A relationship takes a turn for the better. Clarify financial situations. Be wary of advice if something doesn't ring true. A contact connected to an old job acquired in years past might become a financial blessing. Tonight, make a social occasion of doing chores. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 1 star. Today brings inspiration and suggestions from assertive individuals. The words and actions of others push your buttons. Be sure to get all sides of the story before acting if controversy arrives. A legal or ethical dilemma might need your attention. Tonight, turn the world off. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. Dreams reflect past life recollections and provide insights concerning your path. Be aware of how repeating habits and patterns affect your life's path for good or ill. Examine the past if you want to know the future. Tonight, start writing, a personal journal or dream journal. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. Today brings an excellent cycle for networking. Community activities, politics, and new friendships link to long-term goals. A perspective on how you affect associates, what you can and can't do with them, is a focus. Tonight, draw up a list of different people you know. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. Today ushers in progressive conditions regarding your career. Changes can be sudden and unexpected. Look toward the future, not back at the past. Then all will be well. Any volatile situations with in-laws should settle down. Tonight, you will be delighted. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 4 stars. You're experiencing a growth spurt. An underlying sense of being jolted from your comfort zone prevails. Rise to the occasion. Your horizons are widening. You might sense a completion or release of a project or relationship you've outgrown. Tonight, it's time to move forward. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. Today brings a dreamy but scattered mood. Organize your surroundings with a feng shui session. Donate items you haven't been using to a worthy cause, and you will experience good karma in return. Decluttering and clearing out old closets frees you. Tonight, relief. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 3 stars. Today finds a close partner overcoming an obstacle and preparing to move forward. Your support and encouragement will be appreciated and will inspire a commitment. Problems and arguments are resolved. Tonight, consider changing your priorities and accept unusual invitations. Born today, aviator Amelia Earhart, 1897, writer Zelda Fitzgerald, 1900, actress Rose Byrne, 1979.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.